trouble, come on in. You talk about heartaches, where in the world you been? I ain't had the miseries since you've been gone. Hello, trouble, 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 welcome home. Pot of coffee, and you can rest your shoes. You can tell me them sweet lies, and I'll listen to you. For I'm just a little part of all the life you've lived. But I'd rather have a little bit of trouble than the never.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. New York Broadway actors and producers averted a strike on Tuesday by reaching a new four-year labor agreement. The previous contract between the Actors' Equity Association and the League of American Theaters and Producers ran out on June 27th. The new agreement covers health care and wages, but the main sticking point was non-union national Broadway tours. Tentatively, producers agreed to limit these tours if actors agreed to salary concessions.
On Monday, the first United States and Mexico-sponsored repatriation flight left Arizona for Mexico City. The daily flights are part of a new controversial joint venture to return Mexican migrants home who illegally crossed into the U.S. via the Arizona-Sonora Desert looking for work. In the past, many of the 1,200 migrants captured daily would simply be returned to Mexican border towns. U.S. border officials have said that the migrants would be unable to return to their hometowns from lack of money and would often attempt to cross the desert once again. Immigrant rights groups have called the repatriation flights window dressing for a more complex issue. The migrants are flown to Mexico City, where they then board a bus and are sent to their hometowns. The U.S. is covering the cost of the entire $12 to $14 million program.
The restarting of WTO trade talks since their collapse in Cancun in September hit another hurdle yesterday as trade ministers of poor nations demanded equal footing with richer ones. Essentially, the so-called Group of 90 wanted the United States and Europe to slash the billions of dollars in farm subsidies given to domestic growers. Poor nations argue they can't compete in the global agricultural market with subsidized goods such as cotton and corn. Negotiators say a deal needs to be reached by July 31st.
City employees in Billings, Montana have overwhelmingly rejected what the city has called its best and final three-year contract offer. Members of Teamster Local 190 have given Secretary Treasurer Joe Dwyer the authority to call a strike whenever he thinks it is necessary. In an attempt to avert a repeat of 2001, when a strike dispute went on for close to 5 months, Dwyer has contacted a member of the Board of Personnel Appeals to mediate the dispute. Workers are mostly concerned with longevity pay and promotion based on seniority.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's never been more expensive to get an education in the U.S., according to the country's two largest associations of colleges and universities. Tuition for state schools will increase by an average of 10% in 2004 and 6% for private universities. State schools blame federal budget cuts, while private institutions fault dips in philanthropic giving. Many students across the country are pushing for a tuition freeze. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Bush and gang came into office claiming to be morally superior to the sexually crass Bill Clinton. They took special glee in highlighting Clinton's reprehensible attempts to parse the legal language of what constitutes sex, pointing to Bill's infamous contortions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now, parsing the language of the law not to excuse personal sexual misconduct, but to rationalize the much more crass act of official torture. Internal memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the CIA, FBI, and military forces to break both U.S. and international laws that ban the use of torture when interrogating prisoners of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, anything goes. The same anything-goes mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUT.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Wednesday, the 14th of July to you. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet, and all that stuff. You know that. You know, I have a remarkable, this is just so funny, this email I got, you've probably seen it, actually. It's kind of floating around the internet. There is a laptop computer bag made here in the United States. The manufacturers for this at this moment shall remain anonymous. I'm not going to out them, but I have in my hand here a photograph of the label on this bag, which apparently the bag is being sold in Canada as well as the United States, because the label's in French and English, and or English at the top and then French underneath that. I mean, maybe it's even sold in France. Who knows? But in English, at the top, in this computer bag made by a small American company, it says it's got the little logos for, you know, how to wash it and little X's and things. Wash with warm water. Use mild soap. Dry flat. Do not use bleach. Do not dry in the dryer. Do not iron. Okay? And then underneath that, in French, it's got all these things repeated in French. And I don't speak French, so I'm sure I would mangle any production here, but laver à la main, you know, whatever. Anyhow, it goes through this whole list, but there's two extra lines at the end in French. Notre, President, suis un idiot. Anyhow, we are the translation of these last two lines that only appear in French, not in English, on this label. We are sorry that our president is an idiot. We did not vote for him. So it's... The our exports to the world. I just thought that was so, that was just great. George Will wrote a column in the last week's edition of Newsweek. It was the back page, you know, the last word column. And it really, it just brings together so many things that I think need to be answered. That I wanted to talk about it a little, just briefly here. This, and ask the question, are Walmart and the cheap labor Republicans, or actually we should say conservatives, because not all Republicans fall into this category, and many Democrats fall into this category. Are Walmart and the cheap labor conservatives winning the war against the American worker? And keep in mind that in 1929, you know, when the Great Crash happened, a very small percentage of our workforce was unionized, 5, 6, 7%, something like that. And in 1935, the Wagner Act was passed that essentially legalized unions. I mean, you know, made it actually a crime for a corporation to prevent a union from happening. And that led to the increase of unionization to the point where in the late 1940s, early 1950s, 35% of the American workforce was unionized. Now, in 1947, the Taft-Hartley Act was passed, which allowed states to declare themselves right-to-work states, so-called, where you could get the benefits of being in a union shop, but you didn't have to join the union, which kind of screwed the unions, frankly, and started the slow loss of union jobs. Now, the interesting thing here is the main way to view this is that the history of unionization in the 20th century is the history of really the rise and now the decline of the American middle class. That middle class is not a normal phenomenon. The middle class doesn't normally emerge in any country unless there is either a balance, some specific way of balancing the power between corporate forces or ownership forces and labor forces. As Lincoln talked about, you know, Abraham Lincoln said, labor is superior to capital because it precedes capital. In other words, somebody's got to make something before you have anything to sell. And so what happens is that when you have a unionized workforce, they set the tone, the average wage, actually, for the nation. And generally speaking, I mean, it's a good rule of thumb that whatever percentage of the workforce is unionized, an equal percentage of the workforce is earning union wages, even though they're not unionized, because other industries have to compete for labor. And, you know, we had this point where 35% of the American workforce in the 40s, 50s, early 60s was unionized. And then people started, you know, exploiting the Taft-Hartley loopholes, particularly in the southern states. And that, you know, slowly declined down to about 25%. So about 70% of Americans were earning a good enough living in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, early 70s that one person with one income could raise a family and you know, put their kids through school and pay for medical care and the whole bit, right? And then Reagan came into office. And when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, 25% of the American workforce was unionized. 25%. And he began this war on organized labor, and you know, which is the conservative mantra, right? And we've seen this steady erosion now to the point where it's about 8% of the American workforce. And in the process, of course, the average wage of the average American worker has declined to the point where now it requires two members of a family to be working full-time in order to maintain the same standard of living that one member of a family could maintain back in the 50s and 60s. And you know, it's just, it's not working. Okay. So now comes George Will, you know, the great conservative voice. And this article is called Waging War on Walmart, this op-ed piece. He says, some progressives, as liberals now prefer to be known, would rather rid the world of Walmart than of Baathists. Okay, now, yeah, this is the phony argument, right? that progressives, liberals, whatever, would rather, you know, that they love Saddam or something. You know, it's like, drag this stuff in here, George, right? I mean, yeah, this is frankly rather pathetic. But anyway, he makes the point that people are upset about Walmart. And he goes on to point out the National Trust of Historic for Historic Preservation has listed Vermont, all of it, the whole state here. And here I am broadcasting to you live from behind the good old stainless steel working class microphone here in the People's Republic of Vermont, up in the Green Mountains. Anyhow, he's listed Vermont among America's most endangered historic places, says George Will. Why? Because of a threatened onslaught of seven more, Vermont has four, Walmarts. And then he goes on to rant about the National Trust fears for Vermont's, quote, sense of community, end quote, which evidently is threatened by the community, says Will. Walmart would not be expanding there if it were not confident of a substantial unmet Vermont demand for its services. The community that progressives would protect from Walmart is Main Street shopkeepers whose hefty profit margins are threatened by competition from big stores, big box stores at the edge of town. And here we get to the core of the argument. This gets right to the nub of the whole thing. And that is, at what point should a local community have the right to say, you know, we'd really like to have our own local economy? When Walmart or any other big box retailer, and this is as true of McDonald's and Burger King or The Gap as it is of Walmart, when any large out-of-town company, and communities all across America up until, you know, up until the 30s, I think it was 1936 when JCPenney sued the state of Florida and got this thing knocked down. But communities all across the United States had laws in place that allowed local communities to protect their local industries. When one of these large out-of-state companies comes in and sets up business, at the end of the business day, they take in all the money, and they push a button, and boom, all that money goes, in the case of Walmart, Tibetan whatever it is, you know, it's in Arkansas, Benton, Arkansas, I think it is, or McDonald's, it goes to Chicago, Illinois, and like that, just like that. And of every dollar that goes out, maybe 15, 20 cents ends up coming back to the community in the form of wages and taxes and purchasing of local services and advertising and things. I mean, it really varies from company to company. It could be as little as 5 cents. It could be as much as 20 cents. But it's really very little. Whereas if a locally owned business takes a dollar from you as a consumer, at the end of the day, what do they do with that? They put it in the local bank. And what does the local bank do with it? Well, banks are in the business of making money by taking the money that people have deposited with them and loaning it out to people and charging interest. So that dollar goes into the bank. The bank, you know, if it stays there, the bank then can loan against deposits. And the bank then loans money to somebody else who wants to start a local business, and the money keeps recirculating in the local economy. And if there are profits, they're made by the local family or the local company, and they spend that money in the local community, which further strengthens the local community, and on it goes, and all the money stays locally. And that dollar becomes, within a course of a year, typically $1.17 to $1.20 in terms of its economic impact. So as big box retailers come into communities, they slowly drain out the wealth of the community. Whereas when local businesses are in a community, they slowly increase the wealth of the community over time. And we have seen this. I've certainly seen it in the course of my lifetime. We have seen this happen. Very straightforward, very simple process. And so, but the cons would have you think, oh, well, you know, if Walmart can't... Well, here's the community that, as George Will said, the community that progressives would protect from Walmart is Main Street shopkeepers whose hefty profit margins are threatened by competition from big box stores at the edge of town. Zoning and other laws used to block Walmarts from opening are, in effect, tariffs serving domestic protectionism. He's right. He's absolutely right. And it should be that way. Is you know, my take on this. He says, talk about protecting a sense of community often is avarice masquerading as altruism. Oh, the according to George Will, if you are a local business owner, you are greedy. But if you are Walmart, you are not. He says, it is rent-seeking, the use of government to confer economic advantages, chartered up as political philosophy. Well, it's the same, allowing Walmart to come into a community and telling a local community that they can't stop it is the same thing, George. Sorry. Shouldn't local communities have the right to decide what kind of community that they want to have? Shouldn't local workers have the right to decide whether they want to participate in a union environment or not, for example? I mean, these are the questions of our day as we watch the middle class collapse in America as a consequence of conservative economic policies. And I think it's really important that we just address this stuff head on. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire cages like you'll find around George W.'s speeches. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, a call to take back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
Our official song for the Bush-Cheney administration. As the facts are coming out from the Senate Intelligence Committee. Anyhow, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. George Will, in this piece in Newsweek last week, he says, Walmart, Kerry denounces the procurement labor practices that, according to the McKinsey Consulting Group, made Walmart responsible for about 25% of the nation's astonishing productivity increases in the 1990s. Another interesting little bit of conservative doublespeak. Productivity, they say, the American worker, we have fewer jobs now because America's companies are more productive. Well, what does that mean? It means that you can produce more goods with the same amount of labor, right? In other words, your labor expenses don't go up, but your production increases. Now, everybody for the last, the first couple of years that people talked about this, I mean, the cons have been running around talking about all these wonderful productivity increases for some time. But it's only in the last 3 or 4 years that people have really woken up, or awakened, I guess is the right English, to what they're really talking about. If a company is making widgets and they're paying people, $7, $8, $10 an hour to make them in their factory in Bentonville, Arkansas, or whatever, wouldn't be there, but, Jackson, Michigan, where 175 years ago the Republican Party was founded and where Walmart is fixing to open a superstore and wipe out the local economy. Anyhow, if a company was making something there, they have a certain labor cost. If they stop making it there and start making it in China, their labor cost drops precipitously, and that shows up in the statistics, the government statistics, as an increase in productivity. Now, that company still has a couple of employees. They still have the guy who orders, who calls up the Chinese factory and says, make another 30,000 of those widgets. So the number of employees has gone down. The amount of goods produced is the same or might have even gone up. That's an increase in productivity. And so, Walmart, importing all this stuff from China, has created 25%, George Will says, of the nation's astonishing productivity increases in the 90s. The language that these guys use is just, and then he cites a study sponsored by Walmart. Yes, I'm sure it's real impartial. But quote, Los Angeles's entry into the local market, this is the Los Angeles market, would save county shoppers, Los Angeles County shoppers, about $1.78 billion annually, and Southern California shoppers, $3.76 billion annually. In other words, between $1 and $3.5 billion a year in Los Angeles County or in Southern California is not going to be spent on local businesses, is not going to be recirculated in the local economy, is not going to end up as wages for people in those communities, is not going to end up in the banking institutions in Los Angeles and Southern California, is not going to be available for reinvestment into new businesses and small businesses and entrepreneurial ventures, is not going to show up as wages that people are then going to go to the store and buy something more with, which is going to make more wages, which is going to... This is that giant sucking sound that Ross Perot warned us about. You remember? Remember Ross Perot with his charts and graphs and his funny, ears and his strange voice? And, you guys signed that NAFTA agreement. There's going to be a giant sucking sound. All those jobs vanish down to Mexico and off to China. And sure enough, and here in a defense of Walmart, George Will actually gives us the numbers. $1.78 billion a year in Los Angeles County, $3.76 billion a year in Southern California, that's going to vanish from that marketplace if Walmart comes in. And he thinks this is a good thing. Well, you know, I mean, this is the conservative mantra. If it's good for the huge fat cats like the Walton family who financed the Republican Party so aggressively, then it's a good thing, right? The economy is the stock market, right? No, I'm sorry, guys. The economy has to do with the quality of life that people have in the United States. 29 minutes, and that is not accounted for in the stock market figures that seem to be the rage in reporting. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. New York Broadway actors and producers averted a strike on Tuesday by reaching a new four-year labor agreement. The previous contract between the Actors Equity Association and the League of American Theaters and Producers ran out on June 27th. The new agreement covers health care and wages, but the main sticking point was non-union national Broadway tours. Tentatively, producers agreed to limit these tours if actors agreed to salary concessions.
On Monday, the first United States and Mexico-sponsored repatriation flight left Arizona for Mexico City. The daily flights are part of a new controversial joint venture to return Mexican migrants home who illegally crossed into the U.S. via the Arizona Sonora Desert looking for work. In the past, many of the 1,200 migrants captured daily would simply be returned to Mexican border towns. U.S. border officials have said that the migrants would be unable to return to their hometowns from lack of money and would often attempt to cross the desert once again. Immigrant rights groups have called the repatriation flights window dressing for a more complex issue. The migrants are flown to Mexico City, where they then board a bus and are sent to their hometowns. The U.S. is covering the cost of the entire $12 to $14 million program.
The restarting of WTO trade talks since their collapse in Cancun in September hit another hurdle yesterday as trade ministers of poor nations demanded equal footing with richer ones. Essentially, the so-called Group of 90 wanted the United States and Europe to slash the billions of dollars in farm subsidies given to domestic growers. Poor nations argue they can't compete in the global agricultural market with subsidized goods such as cotton and corn. Negotiators say a deal needs to be reached by July 31st.
City employees in Billings, Montana have overwhelmingly rejected what the city has called its best and final three-year contract offer. Members of Teamster Local 190 have given Secretary Treasurer Joe Dwyer the authority to call a strike whenever he thinks it is necessary. In an attempt to avert a repeat of 2001, when a contract dispute went on for close to 5 months, Dwyer has contacted a member of the State Board of Personnel Appeals to mediate the dispute. Workers are mostly concerned with longevity pay and promotion based on seniority.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's never been more expensive to get an education in the U.S., according to the country's two largest associations of colleges and universities. Tuition for state schools will increase by an average of 10% in 2004 and 6% for private universities. State schools blame federal budget cuts, while private institutions fault dips in philanthropic giving. Many students across the country are pushing for a tuition freeze. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Care for them.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. The folks in our chat room, which you can get to, by the way, by just going to tomhartman.com, www.tomhartman.com. However you spell it, you'll get there. And just click on the live chat button. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If you have an AOL or CompuServe screen name or user ID and password, you can just, boom, log on instantly and drop into the chat room. If you don't, you can sign up for one. No credit card or anything like that. It's free. They just require an email address so that they can keep out the trolls and the spammers and things. But that's it, and your name doesn't get sold any lists or anything. So it's a pretty decent place. And anyhow, the folks in the chat room are telling me that apparently in the last day or so, there were some kids at a Bush event holding up a sign. They were actually being interviewed this morning on Doug Steffen's radio program, holding up a sign that said, "More trees, less Bush." And George Bush drove by or walked by and looked at him and flipped him the finger, flipped him the bird. Yes, we have such... You know, they really have restored civility to the White House. You know, these guys blank you on the House of the Senate. And anyhow, I want to get into the history of this just a little bit because I think this is something that people need to know about. You need to know about so that to understand it so that you can win the water cooler war, so you can discuss it with others. Here's an interesting factoid. United States Steel, remember it's now called USX, but it was started back in the late 1800s. Andrew Carnegie came over to the United States from Scotland in like 1870, 1880, something like that, in the late 1800s, with 25 cents in his pocket. Now, back in those days, you could live on 25 cents for a couple of days. But in any case, 25 cents in his pocket, or at least that's the folklore that he promulgated after he made it to the top, and there's no reason not to believe it. And Carnegie built U.S. Steel. I mean, he became a multi-millionaire building U.S. Steel. And here's the interesting fact. In 1901, and this is from an article by Jonathan Rees, who's a professor of history at the Colorado State University. It's titled, "Walmart and the Bush Cheney Campaign Are Working from the Same Playbook." United States Steel was the most important non-union company in the American economy in 1901. Because of its diverse vertically integrated operations, it had influence on keeping firms in industries ranging from cement making to transport non-union. Now, they didn't want unions, but here's what they did. Unlike Walmart, U.S. Steel paid the highest wages in the entire steel industry during its first decades. That's during the period from 1901 to 1910. Now, why would they do this? He goes on to note, "More importantly, it created an elaborate policy of welfare capitalism, programs and policies not required by labor market forces, which cost it millions of dollars to implement and maintain." Why would U.S. Steel do that? While some of these policies, like pensions and a stock purchase plan, were of only limited effectiveness, others such as safety programs and nurses who conducted home visits made a real difference. They offered health care to their workers, they offered pensions to their workers, and they offered the highest pay in American industry to their workers. Why did they do this? Well, it turns out they did it because the Republican president of the United States in 1901 was Teddy Roosevelt. And Teddy Roosevelt was rather outspoken in his thoughts on these kinds of issues. First of all, he didn't have much. He didn't much appreciate conservative economics, and conservatives in general. He was very wary of. For example, his comment:
"I prefer to work with moderate, with rational conservatives, provided only that they do in good faith strive forward toward the light. But when they halt and turn their backs to the light, sit with the scorners on the seats of reaction, then I must part company with them."
Then I must part company. I hope you can hear that. These are recordings from literally from 1910, 1912. This recording was actually made by Thomas Edison himself. And so anyway, Teddy Roosevelt talking about conservatives and ultra-conservatives. And he talks about then the French Revolution and how the French Revolution, which, was... Well understood in 1901. Most people now don't, haven't studied that era of history, at least of French history. but, you know, every American knew about this, that the French Revolution was a reaction in large part against ultra-conservative economics. You know, the king and his cronies basically controlling everything. And he says, you know, and as a result, you got, you know, the French got Robespierre, right? This nasty guy who came out of the French Revolution, who, you know, just terrorized people after killing the king. And here's his comment.
They are ultra-conservatives. Remember that the rule of the Bourbons brought on the revolution.
See, the rule of the Bourbons brought on the revolution. May the ultra-conservatives remember. And then he talks about his thoughts on who and what and like that.
Friends, our task as Americans is to strive for social and industrial justice achieved through the genuine rule of the people.
Through the genuine rule of the people. And how does that come about, Mr. Roosevelt?
In our hearts, we must have this lofty purpose and strive for it in all earnestness and sincerity, for our work will come to nothing. In order to succeed, we need leaders of inspired idealism, leaders to whom are granted great visions, who dream greatly and strive to make their dreams come true, who can kindle the people with the fire from their own burning souls.
Yeah, the guy's an amazing orator, it was Teddy Roosevelt. He was called the Trust Buster because he came to big corporations like U.S. Steel and said, "Hey, if you behave in a way that's going to wreck local economies, that's going to put local businesses out of business, and that does not provide a living wage for people, I'm going to shut you down." And he did. And so U.S. Steel said, "Hey, you know, we'll offer the highest wages in the industry. We'll offer free health care to everybody. We'll give people pensions." Here's Teddy Roosevelt's thoughts on a living wage. He was the first guy to use the phrase living wage in the United States in American political discourse. And he just lays out what is a living wage in the United States.
We stand for a living wage.
We stand for a living wage.
Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation.
He said, you know, they're subnormal if they fail to provide a living. Now, what does that mean?
The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions.
Okay, it varies from community to community. Again, going back to the idea that local communities are the basis of a true economy.
But must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living.
A normal standard of living. What does that include?
A standard high enough to make morality possible.
To make morality possible. In other words, people don't have to steal to eat or, you know, sell drugs or whatever.
To provide for education and recreation.
To provide for education and recreation.
To care for immature members of the family.
Raise your kids.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
To take maintain the family during periods of sickness? Okay, and to pay for health care and if, you know, downtime.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
And to permit a reasonable savings for old age. This was a Republican. Yeah, these principles have been absolutely and utterly abandoned by the conservatives of today. I mean, absolutely, utterly abandoned. As, you know, Dick Cheney, speaking at a Walmart distribution center near Bentonville, Arkansas, near the headquarters, he says, "This is one of the nation's great companies and one of the most familiar names in all of America. The story of Walmart exemplifies some of our very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and integrity." Walmart, of course, has returned the favor to Mr. Cheney, notes Jonathan Rees, by ramping up its political contributions so that it is now the number two campaign giver this election cycle. Number two. 85% of that money has gone to Republican candidates. Paul Waldman writes, "It's fitting that Cheney came to hail the success of Walmart because there are few American institutions that so embody the Bush administration's vision of what the American economy should look like. Low wages, no unions, anti-labor. In contrast," he points out, "U.S. Steel's welfare capitalist policies were in large part a response to government pressures applied by Republican administrations. U.S. Steel believed that if the public viewed it as a benevolent employer, there would be less pressure for the federal government to slap it with an antitrust suit or create other impediments to to its non-union operations. So, you know, does government, is there a role for government in all of this? Yes, of course. If you want to have an economy that looks like anything other than people working for, everybody working for Walmart and making minimum wage and not being able to actually raise a family. If you want to have a middle class, a true middle class in the United States, then you must intervene in the marketplace, because a, quote, free market, end quote, will never produce a middle class. It will produce a very wealthy controlling class, and a very small one at that, and a very large, very frightened working class. And everything in the middle gets wiped out. I find this fascinating. I got an interesting article, email from a woman named Vicki Davis, and I'm not actually sure. I think that maybe she wrote this. It's not attributed, but it's called "The Communists Aren't Coming, They're Here." And this is really a fascinating perspective. I want to just share a little bit with you. The people at the top of the multinational corporations grow richer and more powerful, she writes. The people in the developed world lose economic ground and control of their resources. And a few people in the developing world are lifted, bought off, while the majority of people are oppressed and enslaved. This is what communism is all about. The creation of an elite class of planners with equal poverty and despair for the majority, according to the author of this. The irony, and then this is where it gets interesting. The irony is that most of the proponents of free trade in this country think they are supporting capitalism. The joke is on them. They are targeted for peasantry right along with the majority of the world's population. And she's, you know, suggesting that the WTO is, you know, central planning. It's not communism in the Marxist sense, communism in the USSR, the Soviet sense. She goes on, with each round of trade negotiations, the central planners choose the winners and losers. They play a sucker's game of bait and switch. The first corporations within an industry to buy in are rewarded with incredible wealth. Obviously, that means the largest corporations are the winners. The small corporations within an industry are the losers. This kills the domestic industries. The multinationals then capture the market share of the dying domestic business. The rise and fall of the steel industry in this country is a textbook case of the treachery that's taking place in our country. She goes on, once the WTO is understood for what it is, it makes other changes in our country understandable. The American Worker Replacement Program is the implementation of the WTO initiative of free flow of people across borders. The real goal is to crush American people economically, to make us powerless to fight the evil that has enveloped our country. Well, there you go. I mean, isn't it interesting that the people who 25, 30 years ago were saying, the communists are coming to get us, they're evil people, they want to subjugate us, they want to control us, they want to bring us down, they want to hold us under their thumbs, they want, you know, blah-de-blah, blah, that now some of those people are saying, hey, wait a minute, the communists have kind of gone away other than China and Cuba, and isn't that ironic, by the way? In order to be a Republican, you have to believe that trade with Cuba is wrong because it's communist, but trade with China, which has murdered far more of its civilians than Cuba has, the citizens, has murdered millions of people. Trade with China is a good thing. Well, it helps Walmart and other large corporations. Anyhow, that these folks on the right are starting to say, hey, wait a minute. We thought the communists, with their economic ideas, were going to come and wipe us out. And it looks like it's our own people who are doing it. And let's keep in mind, I mean, we can't blame just the Republican Party for this. I'm sure you've heard of the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC Democrats. I mean, it was Bill Clinton who pushed through the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, GATT, which produced the WTO. It was Bill Clinton who pushed through NAFTA. And she goes on to point out, another WTO initiative is privatization and commodification of our essential public services. Water and electricity are essential to our lives and our economy. Deregulation is a ruse to allow the multinationals to gain control over these services, and with them, they gain control over our lives and livelihoods. We all saw what Enron did to the people of California and the West. Imagine what will happen if they gain control of our water. Is this the brave new world that the conservatives have in mind for us? Are Walmart and cheap labor conservatives winning the war against the American worker? I would say from 1980, from the election of Ronald Reagan up until today, they have been. And the only hope to reverse that, to restore the American middle class, is for enough people to wake up to the true conservative agenda, to what's really going on in this country. That the true conservative agenda can be boiled down to two words: cheap labor. Or one word: aristocracy. And, you know, when you get it, then everything becomes obvious, including all the marvelous distractions. Hey, don't think about the economy. Think about gay marriage. Yeah, right. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Researchers learn more about whales and dolphins by doing CAT scans on their fossils. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Whales, dolphins, and porpoises have some of the largest and most complex brains of any mammals on Earth. Lori Marino wants to know more about how these creatures evolved. Marino is a neuroscientist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia.
One of the things we're interested in is how dolphins and porpoises and whales got their big brains. We know that they have very big brains, And we've done studies to show that next to humans, they're the brainiest mammals on the planet. So the question is, how do they get these big brains? Why did they get these big brains? And what do the big brains allow them to do?
Marino says the brains of many mammals are packed tightly into the skull. The brain leaves an impression in the bone that reveals details about its structure. That means the evolution of the brain is embedded inside fossils of animal skulls. But it's hard to look inside these fossils. What was once bone and brain has been transformed into a solid piece of rock. Marino has studied fossils with the medical technology used for CAT scans on people. This equipment can create a three-dimensional digital image of a living body, and it does the same thing with other types of material. Marino says it's revolutionized her line of work because it reveals different densities in fossils and outlines the parts that were once the bone of a living animal. Marino has used this technology to examine skulls of whales that are more than 30 million years old. She says the digital images are showing how whales developed the wrinkled gray matter known as the neocortex. That's the part of the brain that's critical to high-level intelligence. It's a dominant feature of the brains of whales and dolphins, and also human beings. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Show a little passion, baby. Show a little style.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. You say, wait a minute, the conservative agenda is all about cheap labor. What about the drug laws? What about the laws, you know, what about, you know, hey, pot is illegal and this and that. What about those laws? Well, of course, if you're a Republican... Another one of the ironies. If you're a Republican, you have to believe that people who use drugs are terrible people and they deserve to be put in prison unless they are multimillionaire Republican talk show hosts, in which case they need treatment. Yeah. But in any case, it's well, what about the drug laws? Now, this is a conservative agenda thing, and isn't that, you know, it's like... Some, you know, what does that have to do with cheap labor? Well, guess what, folks? About a dozen states now have call centers in state and federal prisons, underscoring a push, this from USA Today last week, underscoring a push to employ inmates in telemarketing jobs that might otherwise go to low-wage countries such as India and the Philippines. For example, in the federal prison in Virginia, 150 inmates build car parts for Delco Remy International. And, you know, they just go through this whole thing. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's take a quick call here. Diane in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hi. I was really interested when I heard you talking about the international trade policy really sounds like communism with central planning.
Yeah, it really is. It's spooky, isn't it?
Well, you know, not only that, but the architects of this world vision were communists. All those neocons were communists, and they took their world vision from the communist world vision.
You're right. Yeah, well, I don't think most of them called themselves communists. They called themselves, you know, extreme lefties or whatever, but yeah. Yeah.
Right, but they're reformed communists.
Yeah, there you go.
Irving Kristol is the father of Bill Kristol.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lineage is really direct. They were communists that...
In the 30s and 40s.
Right.
I mean, real communists.
They revolted against the Soviet Union, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And became hawks because of that. But all of their ideology is really from that communist worldview. The whole, if you really look at it, you can really see it in there. So that really, you really nailed it there.
The Rex Imperius.
Right.
The we are the greatest. We have to rule. We cannot allow anybody to speak up. Good one, Diane. Thanks
a
lot.
It's not conservative.
It's so obvious. It's not conservative. It's radical, reactionary. Yeah.
The neocons are the new coms.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Diane. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program, check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. New York Broadway actors and producers averted a strike on Tuesday by reaching a new four-year labor agreement. The previous contract between the Actors Equity Association and the League of American Theaters and Producers ran out on June 27th. The new agreement covers health care and wages, but the main sticking point was non-union national Broadway tours. Tentatively, producers agreed to limit these tours if actors agreed to salary concessions.
On Monday, the first United States and Mexico-sponsored repatriation flight left Arizona for Mexico City. The daily flights are part of a new controversial joint venture to return Mexican migrants home who illegally crossed into the U.S. via the Arizona-Sonora Desert looking for work. In the past, many of the 1,200 migrants captured daily would simply be returned to Mexican border towns. U.S. border officials have said that the migrants would be unable to return to their hometowns from lack of money and would often attempt to cross the desert once again. Immigrant rights groups have called the repatriation flights window dressing for a more complex issue. The migrants are flown to Mexico City, where they then board a bus and are sent to their hometowns. The U.S. is covering the cost of the entire $12 to $14 million program.
The restarting of WTO trade talks since their collapse in Cancun in September hit another hurdle yesterday as trade ministers of poor nations demanded equal footing with richer ones. Essentially, the so-called Group of 90 wanted the United States and Europe to slash the billions of dollars in farm subsidies given to domestic growers. Poor nations argue they can't compete in the global agricultural market with subsidized goods such as cotton and corn. Negotiators say a deal needs to be reached by July 31st.
City employees in Billings, Montana have overwhelmingly rejected what the city has called its best and final three-year contract offer. Members of Teamster Local 190 have given Secretary Treasurer Joe Dwyer the authority to call a strike whenever he thinks it is necessary. In an attempt to avert a repeat of 2001, when a contract dispute went on for close to 5 months, Dwyer has contacted a member of the State Board of Personnel Appeals to mediate the dispute. Workers are mostly concerned with longevity pay and promotion based on seniority.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's never been more expensive to get an education in the U.S., according to the country's two largest associations of colleges and universities. Tuition for state schools will increase by an average of 10% in 2004 and 6% for private universities. State schools blame federal budget cuts, while private institutions fault dips in philanthropic giving. Many students across the country are pushing for a tuition freeze. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year, it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to Ohio, a state that's up for grabs in this fall's election, to hype the value of all the tax giveaways he's passed for the rich. He went to Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down from the rich to create jobs for middle-class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Timken's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Timken's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Timken himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both Bush presidents. Now, fast forward to May of this year. Just months after George's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for George's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Timken. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. I want a better America, as my parents did for me, he says. Ironically, a Timken spokesman coldly replied, it's a business issue, not a political issue. This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Timken are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill six eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from North Carolina to California, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite and blasting around the planet on the web on radiopower.org. Should wealthy insiders be allowed to fleece small investors via the route of inside trading? Is that consistent with the idea of a free market? Dr. Andrew Bernstein, our erstwhile and regular guest, a senior writer for the Ayn Rand Institute, www.aynrand.org in Irvine, California. The Institute promotes objectivism, the philosophy of Ayn Rand, who initiated in her apartment in New York City in the 1950s, as I recall, Alan Greenspan into this philosophy, shall we say, is the author of Atlas Shrugged and the Fountainhead. Dr. Bernstein, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good to be back, Tom.
Oh, it's good to have you here. You have written a very provocative piece here suggesting that insider trading is just fine with you. In fact, it's consistent with your idea of freedom. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think that insider trading is not objectively a crime. I think there's no initiation of force or fraud involved. It needs to be legalized once again. I think the main principle, Tom, is that the company belongs to the owners, to the shareholders, not to the government, and that the owners have the right, by means of corporate bylaws, to decide if their employees, the corporate executives, should have the right to trade on inside information. Indeed, I think the shareholders should have the right to decide whether corporate executives should have the right to own stock in the company at all. So I think the government is violating the rights of the owners of the company, the shareholders, by decreeing that they cannot decide what their own employees can do on the information that belongs to them.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, and here we have, you know, now bringing this to public light is, of course, Martha Stewart is being sentenced tomorrow. And George Bush, of course, you know, the SEC had opened an investigation. They closed it with, you know, as a result of pressure from his father, who was then vice president. But they were looking into his Harkin Energy inside deal that seems to have made him $600,000-$800,000 in profits. You know, he was on the accounting board, the audit board of Harkin Energy, knew that the stock was going to tank and unloaded all his stock. And it sounds to me, Dr. Bernstein, like you're suggesting that in this nation we should simply say buyer beware, caveat emptor. If somebody owns 51% of the stock of the corporation and they want to rig the thing so that any small investor who gets into it is going to end up fleeced and they're going to lose their life savings, tough luck. That's capitalism.
Well, I don't think of it in those cynical terms, Tom. I think that on a free market, I think that a corporation's policy would be public knowledge so that any potential investor would know that this company or have the means to know that this company either permits or does not permit its executives to trade on inside information and investors can make their potential investors can make their decision based on that information. But also a couple of other points I want to point out practically, Tom, and that's first of all the reason why historically many companies, the shareholders, have permitted this practice is because they knew that inside trading does not move the value of a stock particularly much at all, whether up or down.
No, it's just a way for the wealthy insiders to fleece the outsiders. It's just a way to move wealth from small investors to the owners.
Well, fleecing them makes it sound like it's fraudulent. First of all, if it's public knowledge, then potential investors can make their decision based on that. Second of all, the stock price does not go up or down very much based on what insiders do. For example, Imclone's price fell dramatically based largely on the bad news regarding the FDA, certainly not on the stock sale by Martha Stewart, probably not even on the much larger stock sale of Sam Waxel. It was the bad news regarding the FDA that moved the stock down.
Yeah, but the point was, I think the point here was that he had information,
yes,
that would have made a difference to anybody who invested in his company. And I think Enron is probably a larger example of this, by the way. You're saying, oh, you know, we should just trust corporations. They will do the right thing. It's all going to be public. Here was the largest corporation in America. And we have all this regulatory apparatus, and which they had been bribing and buying off, you know, left and right. You get a Harvey Pitt in there, head of the SEC, who had made his living as a lawyer defending Arthur Andersen and other corporations, trying to prevent, you know, investigations by the SEC. I suppose it was the same philosophy as Roosevelt had when he put Joe Kennedy in charge of the original SEC. You know, you hire a crook to catch a crook. But it didn't turn out that way. It was you hire a crook and he gets in bed with the other crooks, which is more of the Bush administration way of doing things. But you've got the situation where with Imclone, for example, or with Enron, where the insiders made out like bandits. They feathered their beds, and you and me, the small investors who didn't have access to that inside information, got screwed. How is that a right thing?
Well, again, there's a couple of points I want to make. I think, you know, I reiterate what I already said, that I think that the owners should have the right to decide what executives do.
Why?
It's their company. It belongs to them. But also,
hang on just a second. It's not just their company.
Wait a second. Wait, Tom, there's a couple of points. There's a moral point and there's a legal point. Legally, I think the owners of the company have the right to decide whether corporate executives can trade on inside information or not. But morally, what I would do if I were the shareholders of the company, I would certainly permit by contractual bylaws, I would permit my executives to trade on knowledge they had values going up, because on the assumption that their work helped contribute to the productivity of the
company. So you're going to regulate this?
They could buy.
You're going to regulate this.
I would not morally permit them to sell on inside information they had when the value was, of the stock is going down.
So now it sounds to me, Dr. Bernstein, like you're abandoning your principles.
No, I'm talking about
either they can do whatever they want or they can't.
This is voluntary arrangements, Tom. This is not corporate. This is not government decrees making this illegal and putting you in jail if you do it. This, a corporate executive has the right to decide whether they'll take the job under those conditions or not.
Here's my question. Can you name one nation in all of history that has had a free market, as you define it, that also had a middle class?
Yes.
What?
Every capitalist nation of history. The closest,
name,
of
name
course,
one.
Was 19th century America. Certainly in the North, in the 19th century, and I say the country as a whole. After the middle class in
the second half of the 19th century in the United States got wiped out. I think absolutely wiped out. That's why you had the whole populist and progressive revolt, and the middle class in the first half of the 19th century was there not because of government intervention, because of free land. We had a land-based middle class.
You're a historian. You should know better than that. In the late 19th century, the heyday of the Industrial Revolution, real wages rise 20% during that period. The American productivity is so enormous that even with the country's able to absorb millions of penniless immigrants from all over Europe, and per capita income is rising 3% a year, according to my research, America's on its way to becoming the wealthiest country of history in the late 19th century.
Then why did you have this absolute blowback? Why did you have the Great Depression of 1893?
Well,
it was worse than the Great Depression of 1929.
Well, I know the Depression of the 1930s much better than the 1890s, and I know that massive government intervention is responsible for the government.
There was a pretty good consensus among Americans in the 1890s that the Great Depression started in the late 1880s and sort of wound up in 1893 was the consequence of the robber barons, unrestrained capitalism, basically ripping off Americans.
Well, that's the standard myth that's been perpetuated.
The farmers who
are responsible for the enormous productivity of American business that causes the tremendous output of goods, and that's why real wages were rising through that period, and why the country attracted and still attracts zillions of penniless immigrants from all over the world. Because, well, the major reason is America's free, but the secondary reason is it's prosperous.
Wouldn't you agree that you said that, you know, the productivity of these corporations was responsible for increases in wages?
Yes.
Wouldn't you agree rather that any increase in wages would be the result of a scarcity of labor?
Not real wages. I mean, monetary wages will go up because of that. But real wages, you know, wages measured in terms of purchasing power can only go up based on increased productivity.
Why?
There's got to be a greater supply of goods for the prices to come down so my wages can buy me more stuff.
Why? You're assuming that labor is a completely closed market, that there, you know, that capital has nothing to do with this, that there's
but we're talking about being rich. I'm talking about, you know, being able to afford a house or a car or a TV or an air conditioner or a personal computer. That stuff has to be produced and in great quantity for the price to come down for zillions of people to be able to afford it. And the companies, the companies produce. The government doesn't produce.
Yeah,
that's where socialist countries aren't as prosperous.
I don't disagree with you. But you're not. You're missing the point here. The point is that the cost of labor is a function of the availability of labor as much as anything else.
True.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, my point is that if we say, okay, we in the United States are going to say we're going to protect our labor. We want companies in the United States to do business in the United States, and they're going to do their manufacturing in the United States, and we put up tariffs like we historically did from the 1780s up until
right.
basically Bill Clinton. Or let's say basically Ronald Reagan. Reagan really started dismantling this stuff. Clinton kicked the door open. And we're going to put in tariffs, and those tariffs are going to protect our domestic industries. And that's going to create a middle class. That's going to hold a middle class. You know, in 1893, one of the things that they suggest that I think it was McKinley did that brought us out of the Great Depression. McKinley was known as the great tariff. I mean, tariffs was his thing. This was a Republican, a conservative Republican, and his thing was putting up huge tariffs in order to keep American labor in the United States. And it sounds to me like your worldview would say, no, that's wrong. Let the corporations make the decisions.
Well, I'm certainly opposed to tariffs. I mean, I'm certainly, and you're right, historically, the Republicans pushed for that. They thought it would protect big business. Carnegie certainly supported it.
And it did.
Tariffs, but I think it violates...
See, I would say that was responsible for that increase in wages.
The principles of the free market.
I'd say that was responsible for that for any increase in wages during that era rather than you know, that it was supply-demand in labor markets, and the tariffs had a large part to do with that. But let's get back to this.
Tariffs make domestic buyers pay higher prices for imported goods. It doesn't keep immigrants out of the country who want to come here and look for jobs. It doesn't.
No, but it does prevent you from going
from laborers.
It does prevent a company from getting labor outside the United States. If you say, okay, if you want to make your shoes here and there's a dollar's worth of labor in the U.S. market, and in Malaysia that's 10 cents worth of labor, we're going to put a 90 cent tariff on those shoes. So it's going to cost you a dollar for labor wherever you go in the world.
No, I understand
so
that.
Equalize labor.
At that period, remember the heavy immigration from Sicily, from the Jews from Eastern Europe, and including even the continuing immigration from Ireland. You know, poor workers who came here looking for jobs. That tends to bring monetary wages down.
No, and they were. I mean, you know, there was an anti-immigrant backlash as a consequence of that in the late 19th century too. But we're dealing in minutiae here. I want to get back to the big picture. Also, we've got Nathan in Phoenix who's on the line. He's got a question for you, and we got to take a break. So we're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein, Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org, the Ayn Rand Institute. Stick around, we'll be right back. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges.
To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. A rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're with Dr. Andrew Bernstein of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org on the internet. And Dr. Bernstein, just real quickly before we take Nathan's call, I'm assuming that you've read Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, and you know that he argued aggressively in that 1776 published book that if there was a separation between ownership and management, that there could be essentially a crisis of capitalism would be, you know, the way to borrow George Soros's phrase, that he saw that as a very dangerous thing.
A separation between owners and management?
Right. He strongly argues in Wealth of Nations that if capital is allowed to create corporations, that is, if wealthy people are allowed to create corporations, they must run those things that they own. That if they become absentee owners, then you're just opening up a whole Pandora's box of problems. And doesn't that just come right back down to this thing about insider trading?
Well, I agree that the owners have to run the company, and the owners are the shareholders. And they own the property. They own the company, and I think they're the ones who have the moral right and must have the legal right to decide what their employees, the corporate executives, can do with the property they own. Let me put it this way, Tom. The shareholders not only own the property, they own the information. It's proprietary information. It belongs to them, not to the government. They have the moral right. They have the legal right to decide who can do what with it.
And that would be a very different system from what we have right now, because if you go out and buy 30 shares of GM stock and try showing up at their shareholder meeting, and they will throw you out on your butt. You know, let's go to Nathan in Phoenix. Nathan, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Nathan, you're live on the air with Tom Hartman and Andrew Bernstein.
Oh, okay. My argument or my comment also comes from Adam Smith, and his free market capitalism requires perfect information, which is impossible. At least you need to, insider trading is about information. The people who are doing the insider trades have to give the information so that the people in the stock market can have that information to make informed decisions. And I wanted to know, how can that information be bad for the market?
Good question. Thank you, Nathan. Your thoughts, Dr. Burns?
Like I already said, I think the information, like the property, belongs to the shareholders.
But Nathan,
how to dispose of their property and how to dispose of their information.
Right, but Nathan's real question here ultimately was, aren't you being a utopianist? I mean, you're talking about an ideal world and everybody's going to behave, something out of an Ayn Rand novel. I mean, those things don't actually exist.
Though, guys, prior to the SEC, insider trading was legal in this country, and that coincided with the dramatic rise of the U.S. economy.
That also coincided with the creation of
the rise of wealth across the board, per capita income in this country. The insider trading being legal did not hurt the little guys, judged by the way per capita income rose.
Oh, come on! We had absolute corruption of government by this accumulation of incredible wealth during the robber baron era. I mean, that's what led to.
Wait, Tom, I have to leave in a minute. minute.
Yeah, I know.
Remember, you made the point before about how very often, most often, when government regulation is imposed, the regulators are in bed with the companies that regulate. That's always going to be true. The entrenched companies are always going to have the in with the regulators because they contribute to those politicians. The startup ventures, the entrepreneurs, the little guy starting out is always going to be at a disadvantage
it's
of
not,
the regulation.
No, it's not going to be true if you make it illegal.
A startup guy could start his own company and start small. He's much more difficult under regulation. The big guys
oh, sure.
always get more power for exactly the reason you said before when you mentioned Joe Kennedy.
Yeah, well, I agree. And you know, Dow Chemical is out there pushing for regulation to keep out competitors. And at the same time, there is a need for it because we don't know what those 80,000 chemicals will do to us.
But it's to keep out competitors. The free market is the solution to that. Then they can't use the power of the government to keep out the little guy from starting his own.
No, then they can use their own raw power.
They can't prevent the customers from liking the product little guy puts out.
Okay, and that's... And that's your last word. Dr. Bernstein, thank you very much for being with us. Andrew Bernstein, ianrand.org. Good to hear from you. Thanks. Department radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movement, social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthese 800-827-0270. 1-800-270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. New York Broadway actors and producers averted a strike on Tuesday by reaching a new four-year labor agreement. The previous contract between the Actors' Equity Association and the League of American Theaters and Producers ran out on June 27th. The new agreement covers health care and wages, but the main sticking point was non-union national Broadway tours. Tentatively, producers agreed to limit these tours if actors agreed to salary concessions.
On Monday, the first United States and Mexico-sponsored repatriation flight left Arizona for Mexico City. The daily flights are part of a new controversial joint venture to return Mexican migrants home who illegally crossed into the U.S. via the Arizona Sonora Desert looking for work. In the past, many of the 1,200 migrants captured daily would simply be returned to Mexican border towns. U.S. border officials have said that the migrants would be unable to return to their hometowns from lack of money and would often attempt to cross the desert once again. Immigrant rights groups have called the repatriation flights window dressing for a more complex issue. The migrants are flown to Mexico City, where they then board a bus and are sent to their hometowns. The U.S. is covering the cost of the entire $12 to $14 million program.
The restarting of WTO trade talks since their collapse in Cancun in September hit another hurdle yesterday as trade ministers of poor nations demanded equal footing with richer ones. Essentially, the so-called Group of 90 wanted the United States and Europe to slash. Poor nations argue they can't compete reached by July 31st.
City employees in Billingsmont's best and final three-year contract offer. Members of Teamster Local 190 have given Secretary Treasurer Joe Dwyer the authority to call a strike whenever he thinks it is necessary. In an attempt to avert a repeat of 2001, when a contract dispute went on for close to 5 months, Dwyer has contacted a member of the State Board of Personnel Appeals to mediate the dispute. Workers are mostly concerned with longevity pay and promotion.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's never been more expensive to get an education in the U.S., according to the country's two largest associations of colleges and universities. Tuition for state schools will increase by an average of 10% in 2004 and 6% for private universities. State schools blame federal budget cuts, while private institutions fault dips in philanthropic giving. Many students across the country are pushing for a tuition freeze.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away.
Sometimes we all feel that way. But sometimes I think it's better to just face it head on. Pace Cop in our chat room says, Tom, you're letting this guy talk too much, go on too much. I think it's really important that you have an opportunity to hear the thinking behind conservative economics and understand their worldview so that you can see how weird it is. And I admire Dr. Bernstein for his willingness to keep coming back on this program and get beat up. Those of you who are longtime listeners know that last year before last, I used to have conservatives on the program and take them apart. I mean, it's great fun. I love doing it. And please, if you are a listener and you think you are a conservative, call me up now, 1-866-889-8894, and tell me why. I'd love to discuss it with you, and I will be very respectful. But what has happened is that all the conservative think tanks that were supplying us with people that we could talk with, because you don't look up conservatives in the yellow pages, right, their people won't come on the program anymore. They won't come on the program. They don't like to lose an argument, is the bottom line. I'd rather be on Fox News, So, James Woolsey, you see this guy. I'm not changing the topic here. This is still on the question of should wealthy insiders be allowed to fleece small investors, but the question is really larger than that. It's, what kind of an economy and what kind of a nation do we want to have? Because that's the radical thing that the founders brought to the United States that Ayn Rand never got because she grew up in communist Russia. Well, she grew up in Bolshevik. I mean, she grew up under the Tsar. And when she was 9 years old, the Bolshevik Revolution happened and her father lost his business to the Bolsheviks. And then the communists overthrew them. And she had to study political science at the WEMP. So anyhow, she never really understood that the idea of government, her whole philosophy, and you get it from reading Atlas Shrugged, is government bad, corporations good, right? Just very, very straightforward. And, she never understood that the government in the Soviet Union was different than the government here. That our idea of government was turned to every single day on this program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was getting towards the end of Dude, Where's My Country by Michael Moore and found an really interesting article that has to do with what's going on right now. And he was talking about this country where it's a very liberated, free-thinking country, and the people are supporters of strong labor unions and worker rights and equal rights for women and reproductive rights, and in overwhelming numbers that believe gay and lesbian people should have same opportunities as everyone else. They 80% of the people believe in universal health care, and he goes on and on with these things, and he says, where's this utopia I write about? Is it Sweden, Tibet, the moon? No, it's the United States of America.
Yeah.
That we're actually a very liberal country.
Oh, we are, and we've been hijacked by a small band of right-wing kooks who are willing to lie to people to hold on to power.
Yeah, and what puzzles me is, knowing those facts, either these people aren't voting or they're I mean, how are they being conned?
I would say that they don't think that the right should that anybody should be helping them. But it's a good question, Glenn. And in fact, let's go to number 12. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to number to taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe.
Okay. I listen to this stuff 10, 12 hours a day and read lots of stuff, and I've come to the conclusion that it really doesn't matter if you're left or right, and there's some power or entity that benefits from left or right. And you can be both. I mean, the Catholic Church is extremely, I would say, socially liberal and morally conservative, because anytime you have a soup kitchen or a charity, it's always Saint this and Saint that. And they're helping poor people, and they're giving handouts to people in need, regardless of where you're coming from, and they're extremely morally conservative.
They are?
So you can, yes.
What does conservative mean? I mean, I thought liberals cared for the poor.
Well, nuns care for the poor, and they also oppose gay marriage and abortion and sex outside of wedlock and all this other kind of stuff.
Right. So that's why I think that you can't apply these labels. I think they're ultimately meaningless.
They are kind of meaningless. And the thing is, I think basically the truth is like the rain; it just falls wherever it falls. And you can have a communist society or a capitalist society, and they can both work, and they can work equally well. The problem, I think, that when it comes down to it, is self-will and arrogance, which I think the term would be evil. And
well, see, this is...
The problem, I think, that when it comes down to it, is self-will and arrogance, which I think the term would be evil. And
well,
when,
see,
when
this is...
Ingredient to anything...
This is where you and I part company, number 12, because I don't think that you can have a communist society that works in a group of larger than 150 people, and I don't think you can have a capitalist society that works in the absence of government oversight where the government is controlled by we the people. I think that the only thing that works, and the United States has demonstrated this in our 200-year history on occasion, and on occasion we've demonstrated the failure of it as well. The only thing that works is that middle ground where we say, okay, that's fine. If you want to play the game of business, if you want to conduct business in the United States, we think that's wonderful. We would love for you to get wealthy. We'd love for you to start a business, but you're going to have to conduct yourself according to a set of rules. If you're going to play the game, there's going to be rules to the game, and we're going to define those rules so that, number one, your activity helps our society, and number two, then you can get rich. And it's very simple. And when you boil it down like that,
you had a really simple premise on there. And
I remember in the 70s when they discovered altruism in animals, and how amazed everybody was. You remember when those studies were published? You know, back 20, 30 years ago. Oh my God, we discovered that animals will act selflessly towards others. They will actually even surrender their lives to protect others in their flock or in themselves, sort of behavior in the animal kingdom. And they thought that humans were the only ones who were capable of altruism.
Exactly. And that one thing I find it kind of interesting is this idea that survival of the fittest and organic Darwinism or whatever you want to call it, and natural selection. I don't really believe that, because it goes up against things like, you know, taking care of other people or other beings. If survival of the fittest is the case and natural selection is the case, then it should be a cutthroat kind of universe, and it doesn't seem to work that way. Really.
Well, you know, what's really ironic is how a good friend of mine, David Loy, who is the husband of Rianne Eisler, who is the woman who wrote The Chalice and the Blade and a bunch of other books that influenced the thinking of people like Daniel Quinn. David Loy, a college professor, he's working on a book, on a project called the Darwin Project, and I'm a member of the advisory board of it. And he has gone through, he's in his 70s, I think, and he spent most of his life studying Darwin. And he said, you know, in Origin of Species and the Descent of Man, the phrase survival of the fittest only appears two or three times.
Yeah.
The word love appears like 80 times.
Yeah.
The word compassion appears like 70 or 80 times. I mean, there are all these phrases, you know, selflessness. And his point is Darwin has been horribly misconstrued. That basically Victorian-era economists seized on Darwin as a way of saying, okay, we're going to take what this guy... Say that again?
Stand on the back of the poor.
That's right. Stand on the back of the poor because the rich are stronger than them, and survival of the fittest dictates and blah, blah, blah. And the Darwin actually never really said that. I mean, he sort of danced around with it in The Descent of Man. There are a couple of chapters in there where he's getting into stuff that ultimately led to things like the great racial cleansings that happened, that started in the United States in the 20s and then in England, and then Hitler picked it up, you know, and ran with it. I forget the word for it. And but he really, you know, Darwin has been profoundly misunderstood, according to David Lloyd. But in any case,
correct me if I'm wrong, but I also believe Darwin was not in, I guess the common term is atheist. I think he believed in some sort of supernatural construction or something like that, or God, or whatever you want to call it.
You know, I honestly don't know. I have actually, I just reread most of The Descent of Man about 7 or 8 months ago, because I've got a whole chapter in a new book I've got coming out next week called What Would Jefferson Do? That's about the whole idea of conservative economics, survival of the fittest. And so I had to go back and reread Darwin. I'm sorry, something just happened, and I forgot where I was going with that thought. Yeah, anyhow, thanks a lot for that, number 12. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And but you were supposed to tell me where I'm wrong. You know, you're supposed to. Anyway, it's CIA Director R. James Woolsey. This is, I just got to share this with you. When you, this guy is constantly on TV, right? You know, he's on Lou Dobbs, he's on Crossfire, he's on this, he's on that. Former CIA Director. And he's always telling you how important it is that we be in Iraq. And it was a good thing, and it was the right thing. What he doesn't tell you, and this, he got outed yesterday in the Los Angeles Times, or today, Wednesday, July 14th. What he doesn't tell you is that he works for two private companies that do business in Iraq, a partner in a company that invests in firms that provide security and anti-terrorists. The guy is getting rich off the Iraq war. And it's not just Woolsey, although he's one of the, you know, one of the top. Joe Albaugh, who managed George Bush's 2000 campaign for the White House and later headed up the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. Edward Rogers Jr., an aide to the first President Bush. These two guys recently helped set up two companies that promote business in post-war Iraq. But, you know, they point out in the LA Times, none of this comes close to Woolsey. Shortly after 9/11, Woolsey wrote an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal. This is right after 9/11, saying a foreign state had al-Qaeda in preparing the strikes, and he named Iraq as the leading suspect. He's a vice president of Booz Allen, which is a subcontractor in a $75 million telecommunications contract in Iraq, and has also provided assistance in the administration of federal grants. He was interviewed in the Washington office of Paladin Capital Group, a venture capital firm where he is a partner. Paladin invests in companies involved in homeland security and infrastructure protection. Woolsey is also a paid advisor to Global Options, a company run by a guy named Livingstone. Under Livingstone, Global Options offers a wide range of security and risk management services, according to its website. In a 1993 op-ed piece for Newsday, Livingstone wrote that the United States, quote, should launch a massive covert program designed to remove Hussein, end quote. In a recent interview, he said he has second thoughts about the war, primarily because of the failure to find weapons of mass destruction, but he has been a regular speaker at Iraq investment seminars, as has James Woolsey. When you see this guy on TV, it's important for you to know where he is coming from. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey, listen, I just wanted to agree with you that I think we have to be very careful when we we map Darwin into other domains.
Yeah.
Darwin is pretty specific when it comes to what they call microevolution, you know, the perturbation of species.
Yeah.
But it's a little foggy when you start trying to map this into the, you know, the greater world of behavior. And really, when you get right down to it, evolution operates on populations, not individuals. By the time an individual is born, it's pretty much done with you. And, you know, your behavior then actually just adds to the population.
Yeah, and
so
not
really,
only...
it's what really been, you know, it's just every man for himself. Really, that's not survivability. That's probably counter-survivable.
Sure. They've never read Darwin. They don't understand it. And, in fact, in 1987, Stephen Jay Gould published,
right.
From Harvard, published a paper, I forget the title, Punctuated Evolution was part of the title, and that was the concept that he came up with. And he said, you know, Darwin had it wrong. It's not slow, gradual stuff. It's bottlenecks. It's,
right.
You know, the crash and burn. Whenever the population crashes and burns, the survivors, and we know this, for you know, it's obvious with, like, you know, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, the ones that survived the crash of the bacteria population from the exposure to the antibiotics are the ones that carry the resistance, and boom, you've got an evolutionary leap.
It's all catastrophe theory, and it's the same thing E.O. Wilson wrote about in the 70s with sociobiology.
And trying to apply this to economics, well, you can, and what you get with Darwinian economics like this is you get that punctuated equilibrium. You see the rise of the 1880s, the incredible explosion of wealth, the robber barons sucking all this money out of the economy, and then the crash of 1890 and the Great Depression of 1893, and then, you know, the rise of the 1920s and then the crash of 1929.
Absolutely.
That's what you get. Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call, Chuck. Good point. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Should the wealthy insiders be allowed to fleece small investors? I don't think so. I think government plays a role in this when government is we the people, and we just need to recapture it on November 2nd. Stay tuned.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. 1542 at $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. Recently, a group of workers gathered in the Garment District in New York City to launch the Ain't I a Woman campaign, a national boycott against Liberty Apparel. Rebecca Miles was there.
The campaign demands that the manufacturer be accountable to their subcontracted workers. In 1999, 26 garment workers sued Liberty Apparel for sweatshop conditions in their U.S. contracted factories and failure to pay minimum wage. Many workers, when paid, were earning $3 an hour. Anna Chong from the Ain't I a Woman campaign.
It's been 5 years. For 5 years, they still refuse to pay their workers. Their kids are grown and they have not received a single cent. By not paying these workers, they're actually trying to change the law. They're actually trying to change the Fair Labor Standards Act. And because this will affect workers across the country, this boycott is also about holding all manufacturers accountable and all companies that subcontract accountable, and for them to stop hiding behind the subcontracting system.
What concerns workers is the increase in subcontracting, especially where subcontractors are not accountable when accidents happen on the job, or where the company suddenly disappears when there is any kind of protest, as in the case of Liberty Apparel and its subcontractor. David Ting, a high school student whose mother worked long hours in a nail salon.
The subcontracting system
is not limited to the garment industry. White-collar workers such as lawyers and paralegals are employed through temp agencies. And although they are well paid, they have absolutely no control of their working hours and may work for years without contract.
We were unable to contact Liberty Apparel Company as the line was constantly busy. Their clothing line is sold in outlets like Conway and Family Dollar for families on tight incomes, and ironically is durable clothing for workers and hunters. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We've got to go back.
Now let's go back to a democracy like we had, more or less, largely, as a result of the intervention in the marketplace of Franklin Roosevelt, one of the greatest American presidents, or Abraham Lincoln, for that matter. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We have about 3 minutes here, and I got two callers, so let's try to move through it quickly. John in Pennsylvania, what's up?
I'm just, listening to you talk about sort of expanding the middle class and everything, and I basically agree with that, but I guess how does that address then the problems of just, it seems to me like our sort of mode of existence depends too much on growth and economic growth, and
yeah, but it doesn't have to. I mean, we could do just fine if we recycled more, as it were. I mean,
It seems like talking about the New Deal. It seemed like the New Deal was really based on it relied on economic growth to sort of defined the problems of life as mostly getting enough stuff to everybody and.
Yeah. Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that, but it seems like our expectations now are to have, a lot more stuff than what the people in the 1930s wanted, and yeah. If you try to spread that type of in other words, if you try to
John, I got to interrupt you and move along. But I don't disagree that there are different expectations now. But I think also that it's a different time now, and that Americans will respond appropriately. Armin in Tampa, Florida, or Sarasota, you're on the line. Hey, Armin.
Yeah.
You got the last minute here.
Yeah, this gentleman that called, all the Republicans that run the Republican Party, they all got theirs.
Yeah.
Don't they?
Oh, I got a list of them here. Neil Livingstone, Randy Schoenman, Margaret Bartel, Rita Levinson, all these folks who are getting rich off Iraq, who were promoting Iraq, the war.
Yeah, and they love socialism when it protects the very well-to-do private interests. For instance, how much time do I got left? A minute?
About 15 seconds.
15 seconds. Can I call after the break?
Yeah, sure. Back? Yeah, you can call later on in the next hour here, Armin. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. See, this is, Neil Livingstone, former Senate aide who has served as a Pentagon and State Department advisor and issued repeated public calls for Hussein's overthrow. He now heads a Washington-based firm, Global Options, that provides contacts and consulting services to companies doing business in Iraq. And, it goes on and on and on. It's a remarkable piece in the LA Times today. Advocates of war now profit from Iraq's reconstruction. That's the Tom Hartman Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. New York Broadway actors and producers averted a strike on Tuesday by reaching a new four-year labor agreement. The previous contract between the Actors' Equity Association and the League of American Theaters and Producers ran out on June 27th. The new agreement covers health care and wages, but the main sticking point was non-union national Broadway tours. Tentatively, producers agreed to limit these tours if actors agreed to salary concessions.
On Monday, the first United States and Mexico-sponsored repatriation flight left Arizona for Mexico City. The daily flights are part of a new controversial joint venture to return Mexican migrants home who illegally crossed into the U.S. via the Arizona-Sonora Desert looking for work. In the past, many of the 1,200 migrants captured daily would simply be returned to Mexican border towns. U.S. border officials have said that the migrants would be unable to return to their hometowns from lack of money and would often attempt to cross the desert once again. Immigrant rights groups have called the repatriation flights window dressing for a more complex issue. The migrants are flown to Mexico City, where they then board a bus and are sent to their hometowns. The U.S. is covering the cost of the entire $12 to $14 million program.
The restarting of WTO trade talks since their collapse in Cancun in September hit another hurdle yesterday as trade ministers of poor nations demanded equal footing with richer ones. Essentially, the so-called Group of 90 wanted the United States and Europe to slash the billions of dollars in farm subsidies given to domestic growers. Poor nations argue they can't compete in the global agricultural market with subsidized goods such as cotton and corn. Negotiators say a deal needs to be reached by July 31st.
City employees in Billings, Montana have overwhelmingly rejected what the city has called its best and final three-year contract offer. Members of Teamster Local 190 have given Secretary Treasurer Joe Dwyer the authority to call a strike whenever he thinks it is necessary. In an attempt to avert a repeat of 2001, when a contract dispute went on for close to 5 months, Dwyer has contacted a member of the State Board of Personnel Appeals to mediate the dispute. Workers are mostly concerned with longevity pay and promotion based on seniority.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's never been more expensive to get an education in the U.S., according to the country's two largest associations of colleges and universities. Tuition for state schools will increase by an average of 10% in 2004 and 6% for private universities. State schools blame federal budget cuts, while private institutions fault dips in philanthropic giving. Many students across the country are pushing for a tuition freeze.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Costco is different, and that really POs Wall Street.
The nationwide retailer treats its 100,000 clerks, forklift operators, and other workers as valued assets to be invested in and nurtured. Unlike the Walmart model of paying the least you can to rank-and-file employees, squeezing the last ounce of toil out of each of them, busting any whisper of unionization, and causing a workforce turnover like employees are nothing but disposable coffee cups. How different is Costco? Starting pay is $10 an hour. Workers typically earn $40,000 a year after 3 years on the job. The company covers 92% of employers' union, provides strong bargaining representation for the workers. Also, while CEOs at other major corporations average 531 times the pay of their lowest-paid employees, Costco's top boss takes only 10 times the pay of his typical rank-and-filer. His annual salary is $350,000. Compared to some $5 million a year hauled off by Walmart's honcho. From day one, says the chief financial officer at Costco, we've run the company with the philosophy that if we pay better than average, provide a salary people can live on, have a positive environment and good benefits, we'll be able to hire better people. They'll stay longer and be more efficient. It works. Costco's turnover is minimal, its profits are consistently strong, and its stock price has quadrupled in 10 years. But Wall Street analysts are sourpusses when it comes to this remarkable corporate maverick. Costco's benefits are overly generous, sniffs one Wall Streeter, asserting the stockholders could do even better if only Costco would conform to the Walmart model. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Costco is richly profitable for stockholders, while also providing middle-class possibilities for our communities. Isn't that the best model of all?
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. Speaking of the topics of the election, this rather remarkable, Democrats.com. If you haven't been to the website, it's an excellent website, Democrats.com. And they have a petition drive going on right now, a petition drive addressed to George W. Bush. Hey, George, we'd like you, or excuse me, President Bush, we would like you to attend to something here. Well, here, I'll share with you actually what they say. We call on you to request expert election monitors to avoid an unprecedented electoral and constitutional crisis over the presidential election of November 2nd, 2004. Now, 13 members of Congress have signed on to this so far. And they say, we saw a preview of this crisis in 2000 in Florida. We believe the 2004 crisis will be worse because... And then they make some really important points here. One, across the nation, error-prone punch card machines have been replaced by touchscreen machines that have repeatedly failed in actual elections. These machines lack paper trails. Their source code is proprietary. People don't get what that means. They say, well, you know, in Canada, they have voting machines. Yeah, and the source code is
open, which means anybody can look at the computer program and see how the... Because a touchscreen voting machine is just a fancy computer. Just a fancy computer. And when you touch the screen, you're basically hitting a keyboard. And I could program a computer. I'd have to do it in BASIC. It's the only computer language I know. But I could program a computer so that when you push 1, the screen displays a 1, and a 2 is recorded on the hard drive. Not only is this not rocket science, it's easy. And, there are a lot of... I am absolutely of the opinion that the 2000 election in Georgia was stolen. Now, I'm not prepared to accuse the corporation. Diebold is the manufacturer of most of the voting machines. I'm not prepared to say that they were responsible for it, although Bev Harris, who wrote Black Box Voting, runs the blackboxvoting.com website, found on their FTP site a file titled Rob Georgia with actual Georgia election results and things in it. I think that this probably, if it was done, and I believe it was done, but I can't say that I know that it was done. It was probably, some employee. But I'm convinced that Max Cleland actually won, as all the polls suggested. And the problem is that whether I'm right or wrong doesn't much matter because there is no paper trail whatsoever, number one. No paper trail. There's no way to audit the election of 2000 in Georgia. None. And number two, when you go to the corporation and you say, we the people, you are holding our, the beating heart of democracy in your hand here, and we the people would like to know how's the program written? What does the program say? The corporation says, well, you can't. No, we're not going to tell you. We are not going to share that information with you. Sorry, Charlie, you're out of luck. It's proprietary. What is proprietary? What is anything proprietary doing in the middle of the process that ensures democracy? And this is just absolutely wrong. Our phone number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to weigh in on this or other topics of the day. Anyhow, the petition, Democrats.com, the machines lack paper trails, their source code is proprietary, computer security experts believe these machines are hackable, so voters have no confidence that their votes will be recorded and counted honestly. To compound voter fears, Diebold CEO Wally O'Dell vowed to, quote, deliver, end quote, Ohio's crucial electoral votes to you, Mr. Bush. Item number one. Item number two, the crimes committed by partisan Florida election officials in 2000 were never punished, which sent a clear signal to partisan officials that they could violate election laws with impunity. Not only were the crimes never punished, but Catherine Harris, who seems to be the, and Jeb, of course, but I mean Catherine was the hatchet woman. She was the one who made that felon purge happen. Get those names of felons from Texas and see if there's anybody in Florida with a similar name, especially in a black community, and bump them off the voting rolls. 70,000-80,000 people in mostly Democratic communities bumped off the voting rolls. And nobody was ever punished for that, and most of those people have not been restored. The courts said to Jeb Bush, you have to restore these people. And Bush said, okay, fine, no problem, and then didn't do it so that he could win the 2002 election. 1-866-889-8894. Armin, in speaking of Florida, Armin in Sarasota is on the line. Hey, Armin.
Whoop, hey.
There we go. Got to pot you up there. Go ahead.
I just wanted to tell you that I got this real pretty little card in the mail today. I got to tell you about this. And it's from Floridians for Healthcare Choices.
Oh, geez. Whenever they say choices, I cringe, right? This has got to be doublespeak.
Well, see, as long as you choose the rich Republicans, that's the proper choice, according to this crowd.
Yeah.
But anyway,
So it says here on this card that Governor Jeb Bush and Lieutenant Governor Tony Jennings invites you to a town hall event. Isn't that cozy and nice?
Yeah.
Fuzzy, warm and fuzzy. It says, to educate Floridians about these exciting new health care plan options, a panel of Florida's leading employers, health insurance providers, and health policy experts will take part in a town hall meeting on health savings accounts hosted by Governor Bush or Lieutenant Governor Jennings.
Yeah.
And anyway, here's the point I want to make about this. They're still pushing this crappy savings account thing for health care. Nothing about reining in or containing the accelerating faster than inflation.
No, of course not. I mean, you know, these guys are in the pockets of the drug companies and the hospital companies. Bill Frist, and the insurance companies. Bill Frist, I mean, the guy who's the head of the, who's the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, you know, for goodness sake.
$120 million scam, right?
Yeah, and the other day somebody called up and they said, you know, Frist's company paid a fine of $800 million for fraud. And I said, no, I couldn't be. And I looked it up and it was right in that neighborhood. I mean, it was hundreds of millions of dollars in fines. I mean, what did they not catch, right?
And what did they get after they paid their fine, though? What netted them by
they still crime? Netted. They still netted, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. I mean, it's just
see how
absolutely
these people
incredible.
Work.
Oh, it's mind boggling. Armin, thanks for
Tom,
pointing that
wait
out.
Wait
yes, sir.
Tom,
okay.
Tom,
go ahead.
Tom,
yes, sir.
Tom, let me finish real quick. Here's what really gets me about this bunch. This is the same bunch that couldn't bust their butt fast enough to kiss the rich butt of the waterfront homeowners when Allstate threatened to pull out. So they immediately, with the federal help of some slimy Democrats and the Republicans in Washington, threw together a socialized policy to protect the rich that can pay their own way for private insurance for their homes on the waterfront.
Yeah, I'm bailing out insurance companies.
Who you think is paying for it? All these people in, they created new flood zones in inland that were never, ever flood zones before, and made the people, the common working class, pay a heck of a lot higher premium so the insurance companies that have that money to artificially subsidize for the wealthy
yep.
too cheap insurance that they didn't have to pay the predatory price that they'd have to.
Yep, Armin, welcome to George Bush or Jeb Bush's Florida. I mean, and welcome to George Bush's America. It's just, you know, very, very, yep. You make a good point. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey there, Tom. So, Tom, are you telling me that in Georgia, where there was one of America's greatest heroes, he lost his job? How did he lose it?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Here you got Max Cleland, who left three limbs on the battlefield of Vietnam.
No, stop and say that slowly for me so I understand it. You mean three, like arms or legs?
He left.
Three of his four limbs are gone?
He lost his right arm and both his legs.
And he came back to the country.
In Vietnam. He came back to the United States. He ran for the United States Senate. He was on the Armed Services Committee. He was one of the top experts in defense policy in the United States Senate. And his opponent was a draft dodger.
A Republican?
Yes, of course.
In other words, the same people who...
And his Republican opponent, the draft dodger, who never served, ran commercials in Georgia saying that Max Cleland was not sufficiently patriotic to serve.
Well, first of all, why are you being so redundant? When you say Republican, you've already said draft dodger.
Yeah, well, increasingly. But, you know, people say, well, what about Bill Clinton?
Well, so, you know, you can find... I mean, there are... Look, I'm a draft dodger.
Okay, so
I'm a proud draft dodger. Let me tell you something. I was very happy to stay out of the military. Not that I wouldn't give my country a few years of my life, which I'd be happy to, but a character like mine with oppositional authority problems can't be in a position like that where people...
Well, I think the bigger issue, Billy, is that probably, you know, I have a sense of your level of patriotism, and I suspect if it had been 1943, you would have joined the Army. But you know, this for the Vietnam War, there were a lot of people who said no thanks, and Max Cleland wasn't one of them. John Kerry wasn't one of them. They said, okay, we'll do our best by our country. And then what really impressed me about Kerry is that he came back and he said, you know, it's a horrible mistake.
Yeah, some people call that a flip-flop. What I call that is growing up, having more information, and being honest enough to know when you were wrong.
Yeah, having integrity. Having integrity. Anyhow, your point,
though. I just
want
to quickly go over some reminders about the Bush administration and the way they do business.
Yes, sir.
When they went to run this last election, the first thing I remember is when being told they'd lost Florida live on television, they said, that's impossible.
Right.
Because they'd fixed it. Also, when... Florida was in play, they literally hired a mob to try to enforce a kind of mob mentality.
Well, those were all congressional staffers from Tom DeLay's office, from the senior Republicans in the House of Representatives, who were flown down there, down to Florida from Washington, D.C., to be that mob.
Exactly. So what we keep hearing is sort of like the criminal wedge. You know, you talk about Catherine Harris. Catherine Harris did not work alone. She was shadowed by Bush people everywhere she went. She was helped to figure out how to steal that election. You know, as you point out, they had all these supposed black criminals they'd thrown off the numbers. But interestingly enough, real Cuban criminals were not taken off the rolls because they tend to vote in Florida Republican.
Right, and the same with this last purge, which finally they got, you know, the purge got outed before the press, and you know, before the election rather, and I think the only reason it happened was because Michael Moore's book Stupid White Men and Greg Palast's brilliant investigative reporting.
Billy, we've learned is that if they can't steal this election, they will cancel it.
There you go. Well, they'll try. I don't think they're going to pull it off. Billy, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program. 1-866-889-8894. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine.
You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell me, George, if there's any damn way that there'll ever be a day I can get on a plane.
Oh, tell me, George.
Without worrying about the next maniac trying to pay me back just 'cause you're half insane. Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, folks. Tom Hartman here.
George, I hope you're having fun.
Yes, why me, George? Why us? Why this nation? Why did we? Why? Well, of course, the Bush dynasty had to prevail. No, it's not that simple. It's the anyhow. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman back here with you, and it's time for a Berlusconi alert. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi faces a fight to keep his ruling coalition together after a junior party leader became the latest to challenge the media mogul's record. Now, why do we do Berlusconi? Berlusconi is the guy who is a small-time crook who became a small businessman who bought a radio station, and then he bought a television station, and then he bought another radio station, and then he bought a newspaper, and then he bought a magazine, and then he bought another television station, and then he reached a point where, A, he became the wealthiest man in Italy, although his business partner is now in jail for bribery, and he himself is under indictment, and B, he controls 90% of the media in Italy. 90%. He owns all of the television stations, most of the radio stations, most of the newspapers, many of the magazines. 90% of the media that people are exposed to in Italy is controlled directly by Silvio Berlusconi, and once he reached that noble goal, something that makes Rupert Murdoch's heart sing, he said, gee, I think I will run for political office. And he created his party, and he ran. Well, it's starting to come unraveled. And this is like overreaching writ large. This is sort of on the scale of Jeb Bush not taking the felons off, African Americans who were wrongly put on the felon list, and so they couldn't vote in Florida, not putting them back on. I mean, it's just so obvious. Berlusconi fired his economic minister, his minister of economics, and replaced him with himself. Now, what's weird about this is that the minister of economics is directly responsible for overseeing RAI, R-A-I, which is Italy's equivalent of public television and public radio, and NPR and public broadcasting, or the BBC. Italy has an equivalent of it. The difference, however, is that it is not independent of the government. It is the mouthpiece of the government. And Berlusconi put himself in charge of it while he's prime minister. And so now a few people in the other parties, the Democratic Union of the Center, for example, which is a very middle-of-the-road party, and the opposition Democrats of the left are saying, enough.
So this one guy stands up and says, Berlusconi, you can't do this. And Berlusconi then threatens to use his Mediaset broadcasting company to discredit this guy, this guy named Follini, who was his number two guy. And he speaks up against him and says, wait a minute, you shouldn't be running all, you know, you shouldn't own all the media and be running Italian broadcasting. And Berlusconi's, I'm quoting here from a BBC, from a Deutsche Welle story, the German news. Berlusconi then reportedly threatened to use his Mediaset broadcasting company to discredit Follini. Amazing. Our Berlusconi alert for the day, the national anthem of Italy. And could it happen here? Let's hope not. If, for example, a really large broadcasting corporation was under the sway of a major party and a lot of radio stations, and TV, satellite, could it happen? Who knows? It's Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. New York Broadway actors and producers averted a strike on Tuesday by reaching a new four-year labor agreement. The previous contract between the Actors' Equity Association and the League of American Theaters and Producers ran out on June 27th. The new agreement covers health care and wages, but the main sticking point was non-union national Broadway tours. Tentatively, producers agreed to limit these tours if actors agreed to salary concessions.
On Monday, the first United States and Mexico-sponsored repatriation flight left Arizona for Mexico City. The daily flights are part of a new controversial joint venture to return Mexican migrants home who illegally crossed into the U.S. via the Arizona-Sonora Desert looking for work. In the past, many of the 1,200 migrants captured daily would simply be returned to Mexican border towns. U.S. border officials have said that the migrants would be unable to return to their hometowns from lack of money and would often attempt to cross the desert once again. Immigrant rights groups have called the repatriation flights window dressing for a more complex issue. The migrants are flown to Mexico City, where they then board a bus and are sent to their hometowns. The U.S. is covering the cost of the entire $12 to $14 million program.
The restarting of WTO trade talks since their collapse in Cancun in September hit another hurdle yesterday as trade ministers of poor nations demanded equal footing with richer ones. Essentially, the so-called Group of 90 wanted the United States and Europe to slash the billions of dollars in farm subsidies given to domestic growers. Poor nations argue they can't compete in the global agricultural market with subsidized goods such as cotton and corn. Negotiators say a deal needs to be reached by July 31st.
City employees in Billings, Montana have overwhelmingly rejected what the city has called its best and final three-year contract offer. Members of Teamster Local 190 have given Secretary Treasurer Joe Dwyer the authority to call a strike whenever he thinks it is necessary. In an attempt to avert a repeat of 2001, when a contract dispute went on for close to 5 months, Dwyer has contacted a member of the State Board of Personnel Appeals to mediate the dispute. Workers are mostly concerned with longevity pay and promotion based on seniority.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's never been more expensive to get an education in the U.S., according to the country's two largest associations of colleges and universities. Tuition for state schools will increase by an average of 10% in 2004 and 6% for private universities. State schools blame federal budget cuts, while private institutions fault dips in philanthropic giving. Many students across the country are pushing for a tuition freeze.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What's wrong with this picture?
What's wrong with this picture?
The eternal question. You got you have let's see the media being under the control of the conservatives. You got Clear Channel and all of their 1,400 radio stations. Oh yes, let's bash the Dixie Chicks. You've got Fox News out there aggressively peddling misstatements and mistruths. Untruth? Lies! Let's just call it what it is. Anyhow, I want to get back to this petition from Democrats.com. And if you'd like to weigh in, our telephone number 1-866, toll-free number 1-866-889-8894. In fact, let's take a call here before we go any farther. Doug in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yesterday's topic of the possible suitcase scenario.
Yeah.
There was one thing that you forgot to mention. I don't know if you remember about the Cigar Aficionado article. I think it was John Abizade, General John Abizade, that said if there was another terrorist attack on the United States soil that we would go to martial law.
Yes, and the democracy may not survive, actually. He was I think, being candidly cautionary. I don't think it was a trial balloon, but there are some people who think it was.
Right. And then in Santa Fe yesterday, a coalition of groups actually came together and tried to present a petition to Rebecca Vigil-Joron, which is our Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bit of a fiasco. She didn't show up. As soon as the party went to the roundhouse to drop it off, they shut all the doors and locked all the windows for the appointment. The whole place shut down as they were walking up the steps.
Oh, is that strange?
As far as the media goes, yeah, it's kind of odd. Everything's kind of going in this tailspin direction towards what the right wing is pushing.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And, what a surprise. This, the cons in this country realize that they absolutely represent a minority point of view, a minority that's probably as small as 20 or 25%. Actually, when you lay their agenda out, and there have been a number of good polls that have done this. I mean, the Pew study was probably the best one done about 6-8 months ago, where you just lay out the agenda. Are you in favor, of healthcare this way or that way? Are you in favor, just laying out the basic difference between the extremist conservative positions that the Republican Party is taking right now and the more mainstream positions that, by and large, the Democrats and the Greens are promoting. And I nobody is really promoting classic lefty stuff. I mean, socialism or anything like that. And people always choose the middle of the road stuff. I mean, 80% of the American voters always choose that. And right. These guys know that if they're going to hang on to power, being such a small minority, that they're going to have to do it by dirty tricks, deception, subterfuge, and manipulation of the media and lying to people. And they're doing that. And it's increasingly obvious. And I think that they're getting increasingly desperate, Doug.
Well, I've been listening to a lot of right-wing radio. And, of course, with the report that came out recently on the intelligence, they're taking what they want out of it and spinning it completely out of control.
Oh, yeah.
I was listening to Nathan Allen this morning, and some of the things he said was kind of just bizarre beyond belief.
Oh, it's all the CIA's fault.
November's it. The baseball is going to hit the bat. And we just got to see which way it flies after the strike's been.
There you go. But between now and then, we have 111 days or 110 days to make something happen. And we have to get active. We have to spread the word.
Let's keep beating our drum. Let them beat theirs. And whichever one's louder is going to...
And register. Yeah. And register three friends to vote, Doug.
I have.
Okay, good. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Always great to hear from our friends and listeners in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC there. Across the nation, we've got these error-prone punch card machines. Okay, this is the first issue that they raised. The second is nobody was ever punished for the crime
that was committed in Florida in 2000, the crime of kicking 70,000 plus or minus crime whatsoever, the only crime that they could even be accused of was voting while black in Florida, in Jeb Bush's Florida. I mean, the crime that they actually were accused of, I guess you could say, is having a name similar to, not necessarily identical to, but similar to, somebody who in Texas had been arrested for a felony. Nobody was ever punished for this. They go on to say, as the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights documented in 2001, discrimination against minorities, mostly Democrats, in 2000 was widespread. More than half of the votes that went uncounted nationwide were cast by minorities. Now, again, it is fascinating to listen to or watch conservatives try to spin this thing. And there are even some, you know, Jerry Brown the other day was on TV. And I mean, here's a guy who should know better, who basically was saying, well, you know, there's not that high level of education in those communities. Right? Just kind of laying out this very racist worldview. It's their own fault that their machines didn't work. Well, it turns out when they actually did the studies, they found that the voting machines in minority communities were far more likely to fail than in non-minority communities. And it had nothing to do with the voters. It had to do with the voting machine companies having problems with their machines. And for some reason that nobody can explain, it had to do with the voting machine companies having problems with their machines. And for some reason that nobody can explain, their machines in the minority communities would, you know, reboot halfway through the day and lose all the first half of the day's votes. Or the software didn't work right. Or, this is a big one, this is in Texas and Florida, there were all kinds of reports of this. There was a misaligned touchscreen. In other words, when you push the button for Jeb Bush's opponent for governor, the screen registered a vote for Jeb Bush. This was documented. And this was happening in minority communities that historically vote Democratic. And it had nothing to do with the voters or their intelligence or a clean, honest, and fair election. Now, one of the things that absolutely baffles me, is why this is a partisan issue. If there is no attempt on the part of one party or the other to steal the election. Representative Rush Holt, a Democrat of New Jersey, who is a physicist. So this isn't rocket science. This guy is a rocket scientist, right? Or he's a physicist. PhD. He looked at these voting machines and he said, this is crazy. We're going to have, I mean, most state laws require recounts under certain conditions. You know, if the challenger says, hey, there was fraud, somebody alleges fraud. If there's, if the vote is, you know, within 1% or 0.1% or what, it's different thresholds in different states, but they're virtually every state until recently. I mean, once Nebraska was completely covered with electronic voting machines sold to the state by Chuck Hagel, who is the president of the voting machine company, ES&S. Then Chuck Hagel resigned his job and ran for the United States Senate and miraculously won when all the polls showed he wasn't winning on voting machines that produced no paper trail, no ballot. And his opponent, Charlie Matulka, the Democrat, is to this day saying the election was stolen. Chuck Hagel is the United States Senator from Nebraska now. And he did a pretty good job of trying to make sure that nobody realized that he worked for the voting machine company. He listed himself as a businessman. He outed for this. his lawyers went down to The Hill, which is the publication in Washington, D.C. that outed him, and threatened him. But anyhow, right after Hagel was elected, and a whole bunch of, and the Republican majority took the state of Nebraska, the Nebraska legislature passed a law saying that it was illegal to have a recount in Nebraska if the vote was done on electronic voting machines. Florida has tried to pass similar legislation, the Bush administration, the Jeb Bush administration. So anyhow, you've got the, here's this Democrat, Rush Holt from New Jersey, who looks at the situation and he says, you know, this is crazy. These machines, it is you know, the company that makes these machines also makes bank teller machines. Your bank teller machine gives you a receipt. You go, you put your credit card in, you say, give me $200. It gives you $200. It prints a receipt. He says, why can't this company, Diebold, and these other companies, why can't they print a ballot? Now, some people say, let them print a receipt. He says, no, a receipt is not enough. Because then if you've got a recount, you've got to contact all those voters who walked out of there with a receipt in their pocket. Yeah, they got a piece of paper that says they voted for Joe Blow, but they don't know that the vote was actually recorded for Joe Blow. And if you wanted to gather all those pieces of paper and count them, it would be a nightmare. So he says, have the machine print the ballot. In other words, the voting machines become fancy printers. And they're calculated. And if you wanted to gather all those pieces of paper and count them, it would be a nightmare. So he says, have the machine print the ballot. In other words, the voting machines become fancy printers. And they're calculating the vote. But have it print the ballot. It's an actual paper ballot, and it goes into a box. And if anybody challenges the outcome, then you pull out the paper and you count it. What's wrong with that? Isn't that democracy? I mean, what's wrong with that? And Rush Holt has got virtually every Democrat in the House of Representatives and 30 or 40 Republicans signed onto this bill to require across the United States all voting machines to print a ballot. It is not rocket science. We're talking about adding a $200 printer to a machine. And Tom DeLay, the head of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, will not allow this vote to come to the floor for a vote. Tammany Hall, New York, I mean, it was all over the country. You had both parties in favor of nobody knowing how the voting was done. At least it made some sense, right? They're both corrupt. They were both protecting their local machines. But now we have this strange situation. Try to explain this to me, please, because I don't get it. Any Republicans listening, if you know why the Republican Party is aggressively in multiple states and at the federal level trying to prevent voting machines in the 2004 election from producing paper ballots. And the Democrats are aggressively saying, we would like to have paper ballots, please. We saw what you did in Florida. We'd like to have a recount if necessary. The Republicans are saying, nope, no way. Why, 4 months before the elections, are the Republicans saying this? Back to this petition. Most of the Florida non-felons whose voting rights were illegally revoked in 2000 have not gained their voting rights, and the 2004 felon purge was rigged to hurt Democrats by removing black felons and help Republicans by overlooking Hispanic felons. This revelation following a lawsuit opposed by the state of Florida and opposed by Jeb Bush. They didn't even want the lawsuit to happen. Created a furor. But officials insist they will, quote, find other ways to purge felons, end quote. Old Jeb down in Florida is saying, we're still going to take these people off the list. We'll just have to do it close enough to the election that you don't have time to sue us to stop us or publicize it. Also in Florida, Republicans eliminated the witness requirement for absentee ballots, creating a major opportunity for fraud. Republicans are tricking new citizens into registering as Republicans by illegally pre-checking the Republican box on the voter registration cards that they're handing to people to say, hey, would you like to vote here? Sign this. And now they've got a registered Republican. And a mail-in ballot can now be done without a witness. Does stuffing the ballot boxes ring a bell? In Missouri, the Republican Secretary of State is trying to stop mainly Democratic voters in St. Louis from voting early. What is going on? 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Program, The True People's Radio.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Researchers learn more about whales and dolphins by doing CAT scans on their fossils. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Whales, dolphins, and porpoises have some of the largest and most complex brains of any mammals on Earth. Lori Marino wants to know more about how these creatures evolved. Marino is a neuroscientist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia.
One of the things we're interested in is how dolphins and porpoises and whales got their big brains. We know that they have very big brains, and we've done studies to show that next to humans, they're the brainiest mammals on the planet. So the question is, how did they get these big brains? Why did they get these big brains? And what do the big brains allow them to do?
Marino says the brains of many mammals are packed tightly into the skull. The brain leaves an impression in the bone that reveals details about its structure. That means the evolution of the brain is embedded inside fossils of animal skulls. But it's hard to look inside these fossils. What was once bone and brain has been transformed into a solid piece of rock. Marino has studied fossils with the medical technology used for CAT scans on people. This equipment can create a three-dimensional digital image of a living body, and it does the same thing with other types of material. Marino says it's revolutionized her line of work because it reveals different densities in fossils and outlines the parts that were once the bone of a living animal. Marino has used this technology to examine skulls of whales that are more than 30 million years old. She says the digital images are showing how whales developed the wrinkled gray matter known as the neocortex. That's the part of the brain that's critical to high-level intelligence. It's a dominant feature of the brains of whales and dolphins, and also human beings. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You get your fill to eat, but always keep that hunger.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you 4.5 minutes before the hour.
One single breath for granted.
You know, we really do need a sense of wonder. It's an extraordinary world we live in. It's an amazing country. Think of all the people who have fought and died and bled and worked and dreamed and hoped that you and I could be where we're at right now. I mean, in the positive sense. Yes, we're facing challenges. Hey, here we have this petition where they're asking for, the bottom line of the petition is they're asking for the United Nations, the Organization of the United of American States, and the Carter Center to send observers to observe the elections in Arkansas, Florida, Iowa, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Washington, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. Because, you know, of concerns about voter fraud. Interesting. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jerry in Bellevue, Washington is on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to make a point about elections, and I think what we need is somehow, some way to require that elections be auditable.
Yes.
And do the audits. Right now, a recount is typically triggered for a really, really close election. So all the fraud people have to do is make sure it's not really, really close.
Yeah, so you have random audits.
If you came in and statistically came in and picked some certain number of precincts and audited them and triggered a manual recount if you found any problems, then, you know, it'd make people fly right.
This is actually part of the bill that Rush Holt has proposed.
Oh, I was not aware of that.
It actually calls for
things auditable.
Yes.
I believe
that it calls for 1% of the total vote to be audited automatically on a random basis. But I could be wrong on the percentage. But 1% is enough to figure out if there's something going on. You know, when you got
you could certainly put them in line that if any fraud were discovered, then their electoral votes wouldn't count.
Well, or, you know, you figure out what happened and
fix it. Yeah.
Yeah, fix it, or, you know, get it straight or redo it or whatever. But, I mean, you know, I don't think that, just throwing the vote out altogether is a good idea. I think ultimately we want to know what the people were trying to say. We don't want to punish them because their election officials were, like Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris, behaving fraudulently. Good point. Good point, Jerry. Thanks a lot for the call.
Sure.
Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. To Ira Gravatt for engineering it. To Brad Walrod for our music. To Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. To our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, for keeping us going here. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up and hanging out these 3 hours. Thanks to Jay for producing and performing our music and writing it. And thanks to you for listening. See you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.